To introduce Professor Shinsei Ru. Shinsei has made seminal contributions to a broad range of areas of physics, from gravity and quantum field theory to condensed matter physics. Let me remind you of just two of those groundbreaking contributions. So in 2006, together with Tadashi Takayanagi, Shinsei has proposed a way to compute entanglement entropy of quantum field theory using holographic correspondence. And that has really given us great insight both into the inner workings of the holographic correspondence and also brought the concept of entanglement to the forefront of research in theoretical physics. In another signature contribution in 2009, Shinsei and collaborators have deduced a complete classification of non-interacting topological insulators and superconductors, which had a great impact in condensed matter physics. I looked up Shinsei's biography. He did his undergraduate and graduate work at the University of Tokyo, and then spent time as a postdoc at KTP and Berkeley. And finally, in 2011, he went to University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign, where he has been a faculty since. Shinsei's contributions have been honored with a number of awards, including the Condensed Matter Science Prize of Japan, the Nishinomiya Yukawa Memorial Prize for Outstanding Research in Theoretical Physics, and finally in 2015 with the New Horizons Prize. And the citations there reads, for fundamental ideas about entropy in quantum field theory and quantum gravity. So in the past few years, Shinsei has been doing some very interesting work on topological phases, and I think we'll hear about that today. So without further ado, let's welcome Shinsei.
Thank you very much, Max. Is this on? Yeah, it's on. Yeah. So thank you for a very nice introduction, and thank you for your kind invitation. It's always, I feel always very impressive to be here with this great building and with great audience. I always get confused about the route, but. Okay, so today I will talk about the essentially the interaction effect in topological phases of matter in general. And in particular, I will focus a particular aspect, which is the orientation. Okay, so just as a short summary of the talk, I want to start with a very famous saying by Homer Simpson, which says, donuts, is there anything they can't do? Okay, and in fact, as a theoretical physicist, you may feel like, okay, there's some truth in it, okay. So many important physics, for example, in the physics in topological phases of matter, you can describe by using a non-trivial topology of torus, which I will try to describe in a minute. So there's something truth in his saying, but now we are somehow broadening our concept of topological phases of matter. Having many important experimental discoveries in topological insulators and so on and so forth. So now it's really time to move on to more general surface. Okay, so that is going to be a topic of my talk today. So, but as the last minute preparation this morning, I was really thinking, is really Homer wrong? Because you may be able to bake a donut, which may look like crime bottle or maybe stripe. And I was trying to find a image, very hard, but it seems like nobody really baked that crime bottle donut yet. So this is the best I could get today. So this is the crime bottle hat, which is already impressive, I would say. Okay. Okay, so so much for the donut. So I will first introduce a somewhat more well-known topological phases of matter, including fractional quantum Hall effect and the integer quantum Hall effect, and I will move on to topological phases of matter with symmetries, which is called a in recent years symmetry protected topological phases of matter, and the I will move on to the effect of interactions, and here where this unoriented topology or oriented topology comes in. Okay, so I want to start with a very conventional phases where we have a spontaneous symmetry breaking, and the, for a very long time we think a many phases of condensed matter can be described by defining a proper local order parameters, like in the magnet. So we have a some order parameter. As you change temperature or as you change the parameters over your Hamiltonian, we may develop a some a multiple minima in the landscape of order parameters. So that's how we describe a order the phases of matter and also the phase transitions between them. Okay, but in fact there are we now know that there are phases of matter which cannot be described by a local order parameters at all. So that is going to be my focus today. And a good example is really the quantum Hall effect. Okay, so this is the a famous diagram of the Hall resistance and the the diagonal resistance and the Hall resistance in the presence of strong magnetic field. Okay, so for those of you who didn't see this picture before, you can think of this as a one-dimensional phase diagram, where you change the number of electrons per magnetic field, okay? So what is interesting in this transport experiment is that you see many plateaus. Some of them are very visible like this. Some of them are rather difficult to see, but there are many plateaus. And each we now know that each plateau in the Hall resistance represents the gapped phases of matter, each of them. So we have many different phases, many different gap phases, and they are separated by quantum phase transitions. Okay, so this is the electron system in the strong magnetic field, and I think initially people tried to find a possible explanation for the plateau, and the one candidate is a local order parameter, but as it turned out, there is no order parameter for quantum Hall effect. Okay. So, yes. These curves?
Yeah.
Yeah, so this is the one of them is Hall resistance, and the other is the diagonal resistance. So at the plateau, diagonal resistance becomes zero. And that's in this context, it means it's strongly insulating. So that's what the other aspect I said, it's a strongly gapped system. There's nothing to flow. So that's why it's a gapped phases of matter. Okay. Okay, but given that we don't see any evidence for the existence of local order parameters, how do we detect these topological phases? And how do we characterize these topological phases? That was a great challenge back in the early 90s, I guess. So I will explain two ideas, which I will try to develop further in 21st century condensed matter physics. But let me first explain the basics of the fractional quantum Hall effect. So since there's no local order parameters, we have to find at least something which can distinguish different phases of different topological phases of matter. So here's one idea, which is due to Shaogan Wen. So although we cannot see anything locally, if we can perturb system in a global way, one may still be able to distinguish different phases of matter. So it's idea of something like a generalized response theory. Okay, so in kind of conventional response theory, we try to perturb system locally, like shining light or something. So we measure susceptibility for something like that. But here, in topologically ordered phases, topological phases of matter, there's no local correlation function or no local susceptibility of some kind, which tells you that you have a topological phase of matter. But you can still to discuss the response of a system to a global topology. So we can put a quantum Hall effect, fractional quantum Hall effect on different spatial manifolds, for example, like a sphere, spatial sphere or spatial torus, and ask how the system responds to a different topology. Okay, for the case of fractional quantum Hall effect, as it turns out, if you put a system in a different a topological different manifold, you get different ground state degeneracy. So this is the energy diagram, typical energy diagram, where we have a excitation to the ground state, to the first excited state, and there are many states here, and there's a gap. Okay, there's a gap in quantum Hall effect. But in addition to the gap, if we change the topology of the spatial manifold, we start to see some interesting degeneracy here, which depends on the topology of the torus. Okay. Topology of the space. Okay. So this is something very, very non-local, because if the state is characterized by local order parameter of some sort, it is difficult to imagine that the system changes its behavior by putting them on a different topological different discrete manifold. Okay. So this is something called topological ground state degeneracy. And this is not the only characterization of the topological phases of matter, but this is a kind of most dominant characterization of topological phases of matter. In fact, I think the name topological order comes from the fact that this degeneracy depends on the topology of the space. Okay. For the case of integer quantum Hall effect, it's a topological phases of it's one of the topological phases of matter, but it's a little more subtle in the sense that in the integer quantum Hall effect, you don't see any interesting topological degeneracy. It's something like if you consider zero as a member of a natural number or not, something like that. Zero is number, but it's much difficult to see from the compared to the fractional quantum Hall effect. But you can still something to characterize. You can still something to characterize integer quantum Hall effect, and we still rely on non-trivial topology of space. Okay. So as before, we put a system, quantum Hall system, on the spatial torus, and in this case, we rely on the electromagnetism. Okay. So we can put the fluxes in different non-contractive cycles on the torus, which is possible because of the non-trivial topology of torus. And we can define a series of a ground state, which depends on a two parameters, phi x and phi y. So these are the fluxes in these two holes on the torus. And then you can look at how wave functions evolve as you adiabatically change fluxes. So you can explore how wave function responds in this parameter space described by phi x and phi y, and you can even define, you can even find a topological invariant in this parameter space, which is given by the integral over phi x and phi y, and this part is a very flux associated to the adiabatic evolution of the ground state as you change phi x and phi y. Okay. So this is topological invariant. It is quantized for any gapped phases of matter with unique ground state, and for the quantum Hall effect, it will take a non-trivial value, let's say 1, 2, 3 non-zero values. Okay, this kind of mathematical invariant in the context of quantum Hall effect, it is directly related to the transport. And in fact, it is just the Hall conductance, which I said it's quantized in the quantum Hall system. So in this fortunate situation, we have a direct physical meaning of topological invariant. But for the wider context, it's a little bit more subtle. But in this integer quantum Hall effect, we have a very good understanding of topological invariant as an invariant defined for the many body systems. Okay. Another thing which I will try to use in the later part of my talk is the existence of edge state in integer quantum Hall effect, which appears whenever this Chan number which is defined for the ground state wave function without any boundary. Okay, so if this Chan number in the bulk is non-zero, if you make a boundary to the system in the quantum Hall system, there's a gap in the bulk spectrum, which I showed before. But there's some states in between the bulk gap, which travels along the edge, and it's fully directional. Okay, so this is another characteristic of the integer quantum Hall effect. Okay, so this is the a kind of grand picture we try to develop as a condensed matter theorist. So essentially, we are interested in different phases of matter, right? It's a condensed matter, so we want to classify and the possibly unify some ideas about different phases of matter. So this picture is by no means complete, but I listed some known phases in condensed matter. Okay, so in this simplified characterization, I care if there's a gap or no gap in the system. And I also care about the presence or absence of local order parameter. Okay, I will mainly focus on the gapped phases of matter, and I'm interested in the phases of matter where I don't see any spontaneous symmetry breaking. Right. So I described topological order, whose example is the fractional quantum Hall effect. Okay, it is characterized by a non-trivial response of the system to the non-trivial spatial topology. Integer quantum Hall effect, as I sort of mumbled before, it's a little bit subtle than fractional quantum Hall effect, but it's an example of topological order, and the two kind of mentioned its subtle nature. We put invertible in the among the specialists, but it's example of topological order. Okay. So now what I'm going to describe today is the other interesting topological phases of matter, which are symmetry protected topological phases. So for this kind of topological phases of matter, we need a symmetry. Okay. So let me describe what is the symmetry protected topological phases of matter. And the canonical example is a topological insulator, which is in the title. So one way to describe this is the simplest kind of topological insulator, which was experimentally discovered. So one way to kind of visualize topological insulator is to just take two copies of integer quantum Hall effect and have two flavors, let's say pseudo spin up and pseudo spin down, and just combine them together. So this is the description of the system. So like in the quantum Hall effect, bulk is gapped. But there's something floating around on the edge. But unlike the quantum Hall effect, now I have two branches, one propagating in the left direction and the other propagating in the opposite direction, let's say. So this is the kind of very quick description of the topological insulator. What is important for these phases of matter is the presence of time reversal symmetry. Okay. It's important because if I don't have any symmetry, any condition from symmetry, this counter-propagating mode, by adding some potential, you can just gap them out, so they will be gone. In that case, you don't see anything interesting. However, as it turns out, if you have a time reversal symmetry, there's no backscattering between these counter-propagating modes. So this mode, which is the only gapless excitation you can see, it survives even in the external perturbation. Okay, there's the Z2 topological quantity, which distinguishes a topologically trivial insulator, which is just a band insulator in this context, or topologically non-trivial insulator, which is topological insulator, which supports this non-chiral edge state. Okay. Just to mention, this is really discovered in 2007, I think, and this is the resistance which shows two units of resistance quantum e square over h. So that means it's really there are two modes, one for each direction, which is which are propagating at the boundary of topological insulator. Okay. So this is the example of symmetry protected order. So to be a little bit more broad, the concept of symmetry protected topological phases can be summarized like this. So without any symmetry, it's a boring state of matter. Like the non-chiral edge states of topological insulator, you can gap the edge states, so then you can continuously deform your states into topological trivial state. Okay, so without symmetry, there's no sharp distinction between topological phase and the topological trivial phase, like in this phase diagram. So you compare two states, psi one and psi two, and you ask if you can bring one state into another by continuous deformation. So here we are talking about the topology of the phase diagram. Okay. So in generic situation, you may be able to continuously deform one state into another. However, if you have a symmetry condition, some axis like this G2 in the theory space may be removed by symmetry condition. In this case, there are now let's say two phases for the case of topological insulator. Two phases, one for the topologically non-trivial phase and the other for topologically trivial phase. So there's a distinction between different kinds of insulators. Okay. So I think I will mainly focus on this situation where interesting topological distinction of phases of matter arises in the presence of some symmetry condition. Okay, so this is a concept of symmetry protected topological order. Just to mention, this very definition clearly says that we have to go beyond symmetry breaking paradigm, because almost by definition here, I am comparing different phases of matter which are respecting the same symmetry. So almost by definition, I cannot use any other parameters to distinguish different phases of matter. Okay. So far so good. Okay. So this is something known, of course, since the discovery of topological insulators. So it was predicted theoretically, and it was proved experimentally, and we know there is a topological invariant which distinguishes two different kinds of insulators, right? So what do we want to know more? Is there anything we want to know? Okay, so here's the question I want to address today. Okay, so the problem about this invariant, the details of this invariant is not necessary. I just want to say that there's some invariant which distinguish two phases, but the problem about this invariant is written by using the data of single particle wave function, like block wave functions, which you can get by solving the Schrödinger, one body Schrödinger equation in the periodic potential, right? But since this invariant is written in the language of a single particle physics, there's a question if these phases characterized by this invariant, are they stable against interactions? Okay, this is not obvious, but I wanted to contrast this with the a topological invariant that I introduced in the context of integer quantum Hall effect. There, topological invariant was written in terms of many-body ground state. So there's a many-body formulation that exists for the quantum Hall effect, but not here. Okay. So how do we assess the interaction effect in these topological phases? Okay. So I will mention some more examples. But this is my basic question today. Okay. So to motivate the necessity of many-body formulation, I will give you an example which we found that clearly demonstrates that single particle invariant is clearly not enough. And the example is rather simple. I will consider something we call topological crystalline superconductor. Okay, so in this context, I am interested in the fermionic Bogoliubov-Dujan equation in BCS superconductor, which is like a Schrödinger equation for superconductor. So you have a condensate, Cooper pairs, which are bosons, but there are fermionic excitations in the presence of these bosons. So I treat Cooper pair as a background, but I will focus on the dynamics of fermions, okay? But then its story is very similar to topological band insulators. I care about the topology defined for the single particle wave function for the quasi particles, at least for the moment. And there may be different kinds of Bogoliubov quasi particle band structures. Okay. So here's one example. So I will consider that the 2+1 dimensional superconductor with both time reversal and parity symmetry. Okay, so there are now two kinds of symmetries. Previously, there's only one time reversal, but I will impose two kinds of symmetries, time reversal and parity. There's some gapped box system, but there may be a gapless excitations like in the quantum Hall topological insulator, except these fermions at the boundary maybe now are now a charge neutral, okay? Because they are Bogoliubov quasi particle. So they are real fermions. There's no dagger, okay? So this is a Majorana fermions, okay? So I can ask a similar question as before. So if there's the gapless edge states, which are real, and if I impose these symmetries, can these states can be removed by adding some potential? Okay, if you can do this, like in the topological insulator, we say the state is topologically trivial. You can remove gapless edge state, and the whole system can be turned into topologically trivial system by some adiabatic deformation. Okay. On the other hand, if in the end you cannot remove these gapless excitations, it should directly set that it cannot be directly continuously deformable to topological trivial state because of the presence of edge state. Okay. So this kind of problem within single particle physics, we can just enumerate possible mass terms to this continuum Dirac fermions. And this is a little bit like a continuum approximation, but as it turns out, it works perfectly. So if you enumerate possible quadratic terms within this Hamiltonian, as it turns out, with these two symmetries, you cannot add any quadratic perturbations. So this edge state is stable. And in fact, you can take even n copies of this edge state, and you can again ask if I can gap out n copies of edge state. Well, with these symmetries, it's not possible for arbitrary copies, as it turns out. So in this case, there are different topologically distinct quasi-particle band structure or topological superconductors, which are distinguished by the number of fermion modes, non-chiral fermion modes appearing at the boundary. Okay. Just a quick aside. In ordinary topological insulators, we care about time reversal symmetry. But in recent years, people looked at the effect of crystallized symmetries a lot. Like in the time reversal symmetric topological insulators, there's an interesting possibility of having topologically distinct band insulators in the presence of crystalline symmetries. And there's the experimental example, the tin telluride, which is here, which does realize the interesting possibility of topological band insulators protected by diffraction symmetry. So our motivation was first to consider like a superconducting analog of this. So we imposed some additional symmetry coming from crystalline symmetry and ask if there are topologically distinct fermionic quasi-particle band structure. And there is one, as we just argued here. But as I already said, this may not be enough because I use single particle Hamiltonians and assess the stability of the edge state. But who knows if the interaction can do something interesting. Okay. This question we also analyzed, and as it turns out, for this particular case, what appears to be topologically non-trivial, as you add interactions, you can actually continuously turn topologically, kind of would-be topological phase into topologically trivial state because of the interaction. So single particle can trick you, of course, because in single particle physics, you are not searching a perturbations well enough. But by adding interactions, there are more access now available. So what appears to be topologically distinct at the single particle level, you may be able to avoid this quantum phase transition to connect these two different phases. Actually, they're the single phase. Okay. So we discover by some microscopic analysis that when the number of gapless H mode, let's say NF, if N is a multiple of 8, this possibility does happen. And this is actually not only us, but there are many people actually found such examples. So it was pioneered by Fedikovsky and Kitaev in 1+1 dimensional time reversal symmetric topological superconductor, where they find similar things. So if I have a topological superconductor at the quadratic level, some topological superconductors are actually not stable against interactions. So by adding interactions among fermions, you can turn topologically non-trivial kind of band superconductor into topologically trivial superconductor. And there are now more examples. I describe my examples. This example clearly demonstrates that characterization of different symmetry protected phases by using single particle invariant is not enough, clearly not enough. Not completely wrong, but clearly not enough. Okay. So clearly we need some general new framework to discuss interaction effects in interacting symmetry protected fermionic states of matter. Okay. So let me propose a one scheme today, and I work with some examples. Okay. So the my scheme based on the concept of quantum anomaly, and I will describe why it works, and I will take three examples if I have time. So what is the scheme? Okay, so the scheme has a, let me see. So my scheme relies on the concept of quantum anomaly, and it's kind of interesting quantum effect where symmetry that you have at the classical level may not continue to hold if you quantize your system. Okay, so it's a kind of like a symmetry breaking. Okay. So in the very beginning, I said I'm not interested in the phases of matter where there's a symmetry breaking. Okay. But this kind of more subtle form of symmetry breaking actually turns out to be useful to characterize different phases of symmetry protected or topological orders. But to illustrate why the concept of quantum anomaly comes in discussing topological phases of matter at all, Let me again go back to the quantum Hall effect and the why quantum anomaly may be useful to discuss topological phases of matter. Okay, so to see anomaly, quantum anomaly, it's actually convenient to work with the system with boundaries. Okay, so I already said that there are edge states that appear in the quantum Hall system. So in this geometry, I have two edges, edge one and edge two. In this cylinder in the middle, I have a gapped bulk quantum Hall effect. Okay, I consider the following adiabatic process where I thread the flux through this hole and increase this flux from phi to d phi. Let's say, okay. So like in the Aharonov-Bohm effect, there's a important periodicity in this thread flux. So if this d phi is an integer multiple of flux quantum, system essentially goes back to itself, okay, because of the large gauge transformation. So this original system at flux phi and the transformed system at flux phi plus n phi naught are equivalent. So they have the same spectrum. So one may think during this adiabatic process, nothing really happens because I go back to the original Hamiltonian by this adiabatic process, okay? But for the case of quantum Hall effect, it is not true, although the Hamiltonian itself may go back to the original one, the ground state may not go back to the original state. So actually, it may go back to the excited, as excited. Okay. So for my purpose, I want to formulate this in terms of the pass integral language. So this is the pass integral reformulation of what I just said. So I have a quantum Hall effect. And as I said, I make an edge, which is a boundary. But in the boundary, I have a chiral modes propagating in one direction. And since the bulk is gapped, I will forget about the bulk excitations for the moment. And I will focus on the low energy excitations of the system. Okay. By threading flux, as in the previous slide, what I do in terms of this boundary theory is to change the boundary condition. So I have a spatial boundary condition twisted by this phase A to angle A. And I have a similar temporal boundary condition, which is described by this angle B. Okay. And so this system, H Lagrangian or Hamiltonian, together with this boundary condition, there's an obvious symmetry in the system. So as I change A by 1 and B by 1, the whole system is unchanged, right? It's a symmetry of the system. It's a classical symmetry. But however, if you go ahead and quantize your system, then you have to do a pass integral, or you can use operator formulation, but you have to do quantum mechanics. Okay. So if you do this for the edge of quantum Hall effect, this invariance, which holds at the classical level, does not hold anymore once you quantize the system. Okay. So this is precisely the example of quantum anomaly. And for the case of quantum Hall effect, this is related to the previous bulk picture I just described. Okay. So yeah, clearly quantum Hall effect is related to the concept of quantum anomaly. And I will try to develop this idea for the case of symmetry protected topological phases in general. Okay. So finally, here's a scheme that which I will I try to propose. So in all these examples, I will first focus on the boundary excitations, right? Like in the non-chiral edge theory of the topological insulator or topological superconductors, I will consider edge theory, okay, or boundary theory in 3 plus 1, in surface theory in the surface of 3 plus 1 dimensional system, okay? So I will first twist the boundary conditions of the boundary theory by using the symmetry of the problem. For the case of integer quantum Hall effect, there's a charge conservation, so there's a U1 symmetry which is available to you. The symmetry, all kinds of symmetry, you can use to twist the boundary condition, okay? But this idea, you don't have to be confined to charge U1 symmetry. Even with spatial symmetry, like a spatial refraction or a time reversal symmetry, you can consider twisting boundary condition by these symmetries, okay? So if you do that, let's say for the case of refraction symmetry, what you get is a space-time, which is now a topology of Klein bottle. Okay, so this is a previous example where I have a space-time torus in the edge theory, and I have a boundary condition twisted by U1. But you can do the twisting by using spatial symmetry, like refraction symmetry. So now these two edges are identified as before, which is standard. But these two edges are now identified with opposite orientation. Okay, so it's kind of, as you go move around, it gets flipped, and then you go back. So that's defined a spatial space-time Klein bottle. Okay, so this is step one. So whatever symmetry is available to you, you want to twist your boundary condition by using symmetries. Okay, once you did that, now here's a step two. So now you look for the anomaly. Okay, so you have a, now the theory which is twisted by these symmetries, and there's the expected symmetry for this twisted system, which maybe charge you one for the case of quantum Hall effect, or time reversal for the case of topological insulator, or more fundamentally, there may be a diffeomorphism invariance which you expect for the your boundary theory to sustain, to maintain. Okay, so we look for possible anomalies, and the criterion is that if there's an anomaly, meaning if there's a symmetry breaking, once you quantize a system, meaning your partition function may not be invariant under this transformation. In this case, we declare we have a topologically non-trivial bulk phase. Okay, and for the case of unbroken symmetry, we naturally say there's the bulk theory, which is trivial, or maybe there's no need to have a bulk at all. Okay. So this is the proposed scheme. So any question for this scheme? Yes.
This is for the first line. You say diffeomorphism invariant.
Yes.
Do you mean that these are all examples of particular diffeomorphisms, or do you mean the full diffeomorphism group?
I'm really interested in large diffeos mostly.
But certain.
Yes. And the depending on dimensions, there's
I will present the, for example, the 2+1D surface theory example, where I will talk about the what do you mean by all kinds of diffeos? Like,
well, did you mean that the
Okay.
It sounded like you were saying that you would have the full diffeomorphism group as an invariance group of the theory. So that seems hard to imagine.
That's actually perhaps too strong. I would perhaps focus on the particular subgroup of diffeomorphism. Yeah, that's I think that's too strong. Yeah.
For your previous example, so once I've twisted the boundary in the quantum Hall example, you've already put in the U1 flux.
That's right. So
what's
this kind of two step process, twisting and measuring, and the somehow it's kind of
so you want to make a table where you have a first column says twisting by different symmetry generators. There's a second column or law which says something you want to measure. So that's kind of completes the table. So you want to use symmetry two ways. Twist the symmetries or measure it. Okay.
So Z twiddle is the measured one there.
So tilde means tilde means measured one. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Okay. So if this scheme is clear to all of you, I want to present some results, some simple examples. So the first example is topological insulator, which is time reversal symmetric, but for my purpose, it's convenient to work with the weak rotated version of it, which is CP symmetry. And for all practical purposes, T symmetry and CP symmetries are very similar. Although in condensed matter physics, we don't declare their equivalent, okay? But there's certainly a CP, the topological insulators protected by CP symmetry exist, okay? So I will focus on CP symmetry. But you can think of this as a time reversal symmetry. So what CP does is to send x to minus x while y is intact, but also consider a fermion, charged fermion field into its hole. So psi goes to psi dagger like this. So I take edge theory as I presented in my scheme, and I impose this CP symmetry. And at the level of non-interacting physics, there's no perturbation you can add. There's no mass term, well, no regulator. But how about interactions? Okay. So here's the simple calculation you can do. So take this edge theory and then impose a twisted boundary condition by CP and U1 as well. Okay, you impose both. And the imposing twisting by CP, space-time is effectively a crime bottle, okay. So this classical system has a interesting the invariance where you, as you send a goes to a plus one, where a is appearing in the twisting phase in the U1 boundary condition, the whole system is invariant, obviously. But lo and behold, if you go ahead and compute the partition function does not enjoy this invariance, but in fact, it picks up a minus sign, okay? So this is the anomaly which we are looking for, and we immediately conclude that this system is topologically non-trivial, okay? So this is the anomaly which you cannot see if you do not impose this CP symmetry. So here's the whole point of my talk today. So if you stay on the torus, like in the quantum Hall effect, you cannot detect this anomaly, and therefore you don't have a many body formulation of topological invariant. Okay, but in this proposal, I twist this boundary condition, so that's why I get this anomaly. So another point is that this is a minus one, so that means if you have a two copies of this system, this minus sign cancel. Okay, so this also says it is a Z2 system, meaning if you take a topological invariant is Z2 varied. Okay. So this is a simple example, and because of the time, perhaps I will skip second example, but I just want to say for this collapse of non-interacting classification for crystalline topological crystalline superconductor, you can use essentially the same scheme to get a instability when you have eight copies. But I have a similar story for 3 plus 1, so let me move on to 3 plus 1 example, which I haven't presented yet. So let me describe the system. So the system is essentially the B phase of helium, okay? So the quasi-particle Hamiltonian is written in terms of this quadratic Hamiltonian, where you have a normal term and the pairing term, and where pair is locked in the direction of momentum. Okay, so this is the B phase of helium. And this is predicted to be a, at least non-interacting level, a topological superconductor or superfluid. And again, this was actually experimentally measured after theoretical studies. So people shake the surface of helium 3B, and acoustic impedance measurement detects the surface density of state, quasi-particle density of state, which was compared with theoretical studies, and the people reasonably believe that on the surface of helium 3B, there is a gapless excitations, which manifest the non-trivial topology of the bulk helium 3B. So the experiment was done by this guy, and he turns out to be my undergrad classmate. Okay, so it's always good to have a experimenter's friend who can prove you were wrong or you're right. Okay. So this is the kind of theory descriptions. I have a bulk which is gapped because of the pair potential, but on the surface, I have a gapless excitation, which in this case described by this 2 plus 1D Hamiltonian, so this lambda, it's a two-component real field fermion, and it has a Dirac relativistic dispersion at low energies. Okay, so helium 3B, you can impose either time reversal or its CP partner P, meaning because it's a neutral system, I only have a parity. So let me impose a parity symmetry and see what happens. So at this level, at the non-interacting level, you can consider a n copies of this system. So you have n copies of real fermions, gapless fermions on the surface. And as before, at the quadratic level, you conclude that there's no quadratic perturbations you can add to gap out the surface. Okay. But of course, as before, we can ask what is the effect of interactions. Okay. So I will follow my scheme, and I put my theory on T3, okay, first, okay? So T3, I only consider flat background metric, but even with flat background metric, I can consider a changing the shape of the torus by changing this aspect ratio and the angle between these coordinate axes. And there's the set of large coordinate transformations which preserve a torus. In this case, they form a SL3Z group. And it is essentially the symmetry of the system, which we expect to hold. Okay, so you have a partition function, which depends on the background metric and the under large coordinate transformation. In this case, we expect this system to be invariant. Okay, and in fact, the system is invariant under large coordinate transformation, large diffeos, if you do not include symmetry conditions. Okay. So to incorporate symmetry conditions, as I did before, I twist the boundary conditions of the surface theory by twisting boundary condition by the symmetry of the system, which is the diffraction symmetry, which I described. Something I didn't describe is the number of fermion number parity conservation. In fermionic system, we expect the fermion number is conserved mod 2. Since it is superfluid or superconductor, we don't expect the particle numbers to be conserved, but particle number should be still conserved mod 2. Okay, so I use these symmetry generators to twist the boundary condition, and in this case, I get various different unoriented manifold. Okay. Then I define the partition function in this unoriented background and ask if the system maintain the diffeomorphism invariance. Okay. So the result is that if the number of fermion flavor on the surface is 0 mod 8, the multiple of integer multiple of 8, we can establish we cannot establish the invariance under large diffeos, but when NF is integer multiple of 8, we can maintain large diffeos. So from here, we conclude that the surface theory has at least Z8 different classification. Okay. So as it turns out, this analysis is not wrong, but it's a little bit naive. Okay. So after we put our paper on archive this summer, Witten told us that this calculation relying on the specific background manifold has to be generalized to more generic four manifold. I mean, four here means that I have a three-dimensional system, but I have a one direction which I consider performing the large diffeomorphism transformation. So this setting has to be more generalized to get more conclusive result. And in this case, we have actually the surface state is non-trivial whenever NF is different from a 16 multiple of integer. Okay. I didn't describe, but there's the previous result, which uses a different language to conclude that surface theory has to be classified by Z16. Okay. For example, there's the work using the concept of surface topological order and so on and so forth. But here's the kind of calculations coming from a free fermion pass integral perspective. Okay. I think I can conclude now. So I describe that interaction effect in topological insulators and superconductors. So some states of matter, which appear to be non-trivial at quadratic level, may be actually unstable against interactions. Okay, so there are now many examples we know. We are trying to develop somehow a unified view on this phenomena. I think I already described by these points. So our scheme relies on the twisting boundary condition and the quantum anomalies, and the unoriented spacetime naturally appears. Okay, so I think I will skip these two comments. So here's the people I would like to acknowledge. So so these are the students from UIUC who did real works, and the postdoc Takahiro and the Gil and Cho, and the and these senior people, including Rob, which is right there. So he tells me which is what is wrong and what is right. And the, so these are the papers we put together on archive. So thank you very much.
I'm a little bit confused. When you talk about non-interacting superconductor, right? So in fact, I don't know what it is, a non-interacting superconductor, because you're talking about the effective single particle Hamiltonian, in fact, right? So how you physically, how you distinguish what are the interactions you're talking about, right? Because you already build in these particle-particle interactions in this effective Hamiltonian, like whatever, BCS or DGEN, and then on the top, you're looking on the interactions. What are those interactions?
So the in particular examples, we are interested in quasi-interactions among quasi-particles, like
residual interactions between quasi. So it can be four fermion interactions among quasi-particles.
But in most of like BCS materials, not right. Those effects are very, you know, busy. You can get away with mean field. What is the, is it like those materials are really different? You feel like you need to take these interactions, or is it like
that's
a
right.
question?
So it is definitely true that superconductivity arises because of interaction in the first place.
So we are thinking that we are deep inside the phase of superconducting phase.
Effective Hamiltonian.
Effective Hamiltonian.
We're not talking about microscopic.
Yeah. But of course, you may worry about phase fluctuations, which exist. And the in particular cases, like 1 plus 1D superconductors, this effect of phase fluctuations have been studied. And the I think even in that case, topology persists. But for example, the boundary excitations, which I described as a signature of topological phases of what I'm describing, because of phase fluctuation, it may have a not exponential decay into the bulk, but it may have a long range, like a power law decay and something.
Let me just follow up. Sorry. When you were showing these pictures and you said that the interactions basically can destroy the topological, is it like you have any arbitrary small interaction, or you expect a quantum critical point for finite UC, some sort of critical value?
So this scheme doesn't tell this. And I think it depends on, for example, dimensions. For the case of 1 plus 1 dimensions, infinitesimal interaction is enough to destroy the concept of topology. Whereas in other cases, you may have to have a very strong interactions. Right, but maybe 1 plus 1 is too extreme because interaction is very strong there. So any interaction is relevant. But in higher dimensions, the surface state may be perturbatively stable, okay? But I think ultimately we are not talking about the relevancy or irrelevancy of interactions. We are interested in if you can define a topological invariant in that way. So in higher dimensions, you may need to see add substantial interactions to see the destruction of the phase, but whenever anomaly vanishes, even for infinitesimal interactions, there's no concept of topology at all.
So you talk about these anomalies, but could you tell us what sort of experimental setup you have in mind that could test these anomalies?
That's right. So for the case of quantum Hall effect, of course, the anomaly is related to transport.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I described it's a very fortunate situation. For the other cases,
I think it's hard to do experiment. Also, people made like a Mayer stripe of superconductor and so on and so forth. So in principle, you can test it. But it's, I think it's of course more difficult to fabricate such a system. But however, this twisting boundary condition can be easily done in numerics, for example. There, what you can do is to put your system on the unoriented surface, which is possible numerically, and you can thread fluxes to see how ground state responds. Okay. So I don't have a very good experimental proposal, but this can be useful at least for numerics.
Numerically, what sort of, I don't know, quote unquote observable would be looking at to see this?
That's right. So here I formulated everything in terms of partition functions.
Yeah.
So that's why it's a little bit difficult to do this.
I guess that's not observable.
Yeah, that's not observable. And that's, but in fact, this is not a fundamental obstacle. So I go back to the original quantum horse ride where we can do something like this. So what you can do is to put the theory, so you replace this torus by a crime bottle generated by the twisting I described, and you can study a ground state on the unoriented surface with, let's say, one flux. This is precisely parallel to what I described in terms of edge language, but there's an equivalent statement for the in terms of this parameterized ground state. Okay, so we haven't tested this method yet in this way. But we did some preliminary calculation, which shows it maybe actually may work. Okay, but it's still an incomplete story. Okay.
What would you be looking for in this case? Interference between two different.
Yeah. So. So in this particular, so let me take a particular example, like a topological insulator I described. Okay. So I have a two symmetry time reversal. And the U1 phase, both are conserved in the system. So if I twist the boundary condition by using a parity or time reversal symmetry, I first generate an unoriented spatial torus, but then I can still thread the flux in this unoriented geometry, okay? So you get a series of a ground state parameterized by these fluxes. And you can see how the ground state evolves and as you change fluxes that you can measure. But it's a good question if it is related to any transport or not. That's a very good question. In this case, it is actually Hall conductant itself. So yes, we can maybe give some name for it. But it's a response, but it's not easy measurement.
To measure this experimentally,
yes.
Interfere two different paths through the parameter space. Is that right, or is there some other way?
That's right. So, as far as you have, so you need a one non-contractible loop in parameter space. So here you have a two, which is sort of better. But even with even on the crime bottle, there's a one uncontractible loop. Yeah. So along that, many body wave functions so interfere along this loop. So it's possible.
It's possible experimentally.
So modulo this practical question that how to fabricate this system, but as far as you can do this, the phase exist. So there's an interference pass, and the problem is I don't know how to relate this phase to transport experiment or some other experiment, but that the phase exists.
Phase exists,
yeah. So phase is very defined, yeah.
Another couple of general, you started off by saying that one is looking for a general framework to generalize the sort of order parameter framework.
Right.
How far do you see this going? I mean, this handles a few extra cases, but do you see that it's something more general?
I think this scheme, I think there may be some more improvements we can put, but I think the scheme itself is, I think it sounds conceptually right to me. But this is still under development. For example, for the case of order parameter, you can describe even phase transitions between two different phases. we are not yet there. We can just distinguish, we can possibly distinguish different phases of matter by using this, I think. But is it as powerful as other parameter? I'm not completely sure.
I'm just wondering if it unifies different cases. Like, can you see the order parameter as a special case of this?
Yes, yeah, so for the all the bands topological, I mean, the so we did previously the classification of free system, free but disordered system. For all these cases, this scheme work. Okay, so that sort of as unified, that cover as wide as that possibilities. For bosonic systems, like other systems, we have some work done, and the but not as exhaustively as in the fermionic cases. But I think this scheme still work.
You don't know whether there is a free transition or at least in these topological numbers, you will see probably jumps, right? The churn or whatever number when you go across the free,
yeah,
so
the
see
phase
like
transition.
Plus, minus, something,
yeah,
like this.
Yeah. So maybe I should say whenever this topological invariant vanishes, if this phase doesn't exist, there should be a smooth path to connecting topologically non-trivial phase and topologically, I mean, which appear to be topologically non-trivial, topologically non-trivial. Okay. Yeah, so I think I kind of confused the discussion by saying relevancy or irrelevancy, but yeah, that's actually irrelevant.
So can one identify some bulk topological action from this boundary anomaly?
Yeah, so this is, there's the, a lot of work in this direction, and the, for example, I think I mentioned briefly, but one work by Kapustin and the collaborators, they directly write down effective theories, which you can imagine arising for these phases. So in principle, you can do this. And the, but here, but as far as I understand, they do not derive these such terms for given particular situations. Where we kind of started from some examples, and the integrate fermions explicitly to get anomalies or topological terms or effective actions, right? Yeah, so there's, it seems, yeah, there's such directions, yes.
Actually, I think the question.
Yes.
Maybe we'll go to the slide with SL3D.
Can you maybe elaborate this sum over G?
That's right. I didn't explain this expression. So G is the one of the group elements in symmetry group, and I twist my boundary condition using one of these group elements. So that defines my boundary condition, which is specified by this vector G, which takes one of these group elements. It's a three-component vector specifying boundary condition for each direction. So to try to make the modular invariant theory, I sum all these possible boundary conditions. And I allow some coefficient. By adjusting this coefficient, one may be able to achieve modular invariance. So that's what we're doing. Yeah, so if we impose modular invariance, we get the conditions on epsilon. Sometimes it is satisfiable, sometimes not.
I see. And you couldn't just choose one boundary condition and do SL3Z transformation.
Yeah, you can sort of guess under kind of subset, which is closed under SL3Z. But
conditions go into each other, yeah, and
yeah.
SL3Z.
That's right. So you can guess which boundary condition into that, or so you can sort of guess which sectors are connected through SL3Z.
I see.
Up to phase, which we don't know.
I see. And yeah. Then
is it necessary to put the twisting along all three directions?
As it turns out, first of all, if I impose parities,
many modular parameters are killed by parity symmetry itself. And the I think in so yeah, we don't have to explore all SL3D, that is true. I think that's because of this combination of parity and the consideration coming from which sectors are connected to which.
But one question is whether whether you need to put in kind of twisting along the time direction, because here you explore also the time direction.
Time direction, yes.
So is there twisting along the time direction which is necessary, or
I think which is necessary to maintain modular inverse.
I think maybe you said something about this before, but I didn't quite understand. So there's a one can make a distinction between phases and phase transitions.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, obviously, it's very interesting to find the different phases, but you define them by connectivity.
Right.
But there are phase transitions that go from one phase to itself, like between steam and water or something.
Right, right, right.
From your point of view, steam and water would be in the same phase.
Yeah, so...
And yet there's still a phase transition at certain pressures and temperatures.
This is first order.
What?
It's first order.
That one is first order, yes.
Yes.
Does this have something to say about phase transition as opposed to different phase?
Right, so...
So this says something about this scheme says something about the connectivities of the phases, at least, and so at this moment we don't have a good understanding between phase transitions between these different phases, and I think even between so I think some phase transition may be in some sense accidental, like the example you are saying. So along some cut in the phase diagram, it may be some phase transition may be avoided, like you as you go through. But some transition may be necessary if these two different phases are this has a different topological invariant, for example. So I think you may need a two different scheme to describe these two different situations. But I think that the accidental quantum phase transition, my guess, is most difficult because it's accidental. But some quantum phase transition that you cannot avoid, maybe.
Yes, accidental from this point of view.
Yeah, from that point of view, yeah.
But maybe from another point of view.
Yeah, so then I think, so I think as we go into kind of less topological situations, there are more dynamical knowledge that you have to put in. So that's, I think, it's way more difficult. So that's kind of, I'm guessing, you need separate theories. But ultimately, I don't know.
Okay.